You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The Alberta Tar Sands Development Project covers a vast area which it's turning into a wasteland with huge open pits and tailing ponds. The environmental consequences are enormous, and it makes a mockery of any Canadian attempt to reduce carbon emissions under the Kyoto Protocol. So why does the language about them refer to a moratorium rather than shutting them down? Peter Cizek is a land use planner and writer on the topic of the Alberta Tar Sands, with an article to appear in the January edition of the Canadian Dimension, and he's joined me in the studio to discuss it. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
With the environmental consequences of the tar sands project so well known, why aren't we hearing more debate about shutting them down?
Well, it seems to be something that's completely unspeakable. As we know, Mike Byers, during the election, Mike Byers is a professor of international relations at University of British Columbia, was one of the first prominent politicians to say the word shut down the tar sands. But what we have is a very curious sequence of circumstances that over the years led to this word moratorium. And what's particularly curious about it is that it was only a few years ago that the mainstream environmental groups were too scared to even utter the word moratorium.
So, okay, that's the word that we're hearing used now. You know, what's wrong with the notion of a moratorium?
Well, perhaps it's useful to understand how the word moratorium came about. In December 2005, the Pembina Institute from Calgary, which is a so-called environmental think tank, convened a number of large environmental organizations to put forth a declaration on the tar sands. And this group included such very mainstream organizations as the World Wildlife Fund of Canada, the Canadian Parks and Wilderness Society, and many others. And in this declaration, the word moratorium was not uttered. In fact, what they were calling for was a kinder, gentler tar sands. Among the things that they campaigned for in this declaration was something called a carbon neutral tar sands by the year 2020, where through a combination of some reductions in carbon emissions, but primarily through the purchase of so-called carbon offsets, the tar sands allegedly would not contribute to further emissions.
Now we've moved forward from carbon neutrality to a moratorium by 2050, but you know, a moratorium by 2050, what would the implications of that be for the environment?
Well, it wasn't until the spring of 2006 that the mainstream environmentalists dared utter the word moratorium, and that was only after the former premier of Alberta, Peter Lougheed, toured the tar sands and was so utterly appalled by what he saw that he himself called for a moratorium. Thereafter, the mainstream environmental groups fell in line that this new ideology had been articulated by the former conservative premier and were able to speak of a moratorium. Now, having said this, the Sierra Club of Canada, to its credit, had started to use the word moratorium prior to that.
Is that a solution to the environmental disaster of the tar sands as we know it?
Well, a moratorium basically involves this. We need to understand that there are a huge number of leases covering most of the tar sands area in northern Alberta that have already been issued, and a whole number of approvals that have already been issued, in addition to the projects that are there now. So even if we had the so-called moratorium, which is calling for no new approvals, this would still triple the volume of tar sands extraction to 3.6 million barrels a day. It would double the size of open pit mines to twice the built up area of the city of Calgary. It would almost double the volume of water used to twice Calgary's municipal needs, or half the Athabasca River's low water flow during winter. And it would more than double natural gas consumption to 2 billion cubic feet per day, or more than the maximum capacity of the planned Mackenzie gas project. By the way, all of the Arctic natural gas is to go directly to the tar sands through something called the proposed North Central Corridor, which is a jumbo pipeline that's big enough to take all of the natural gas not only from the Canadian Arctic, but also from Alaska. Finally, the consequences of this so-called moratorium would double greenhouse gas emissions, which representing one quarter of Canada's current Kyoto gap. So essentially, this moratorium is acquiescing, it's a capitulation to the status quo.
Yeah, these are extraordinary figures that you say. Certainly, they don't seem like a solution to an environmental disaster. You mentioned some pre-approved, some permits that have already been issued. It just looks like that the future's already mapped out with pre-approved projects.
Well, it certainly is. And this is basic arithmetic that I've done here, combined with some mapping that we've done using satellite imagery and all of the projects that have already been approved and that are planned. And by the way, those maps are available on a website, oilsandstruth.org. And all we've done is simply compiled existing publicly available data from the internet, and the mainstream environmentalists need to be aware that so much is already approved, and to call for no new approvals is patently absurd.
So, yeah, I remember when we talked earlier, previously, about the lack of oppositions from the mainstream environmental groups. Has that situation changed in the last couple of years?
Well, it's changed to the extent that they're now not afraid to utter the word moratorium. That is, of course, with the exception of the most conservative of these groups, which include the World Wildlife Fund, Ducks Unlimited. But it leads one to seriously wonder why we have a so-called environmental movement in Canada that needs to take the lead from people such as Peter Lougheed. And there are very concrete reasons why.
Tell me about them. And whether it's possible for environmental groups to actually make that leap, in your opinion, to calling for shutting them down?
Well, ultimately, they will need to, because there's no negotiating with reality. But the reasons why is that we have a phenomenon where an extremely large private foundation from the United States called the Pew Charitable Trusts, which has an endowment of over $4 billion, is bankrolling most of these mainstream environmental organizations in Canada. And very curiously, it was the Pew family that built the original tar sands project in 1967. At the time, it was called a bulwark against godless communism to wean the United States off of foreign oil. Canadian oil certainly wasn't considered foreign to them. And although the Pew family no longer own this project, which has since become Suncor, the Pew family Sunoco continues to refine very large amounts of tar sands oil, and certainly want to refine more.
Hearing of large organizations and large masses of money like the Pew Foundation and the like makes me think of the financial crisis. And so with this financial crisis and the drop in oil prices, Won't the tar sands projects lose their competitive edge and just fade away somehow?
Well, that certainly seems to be the case in the last few weeks, where we've seen the delay or cancellation of $40 billion of tar sands projects. And it may very well be that the financial meltdown actually brings about a shutdown or a very large reduction in the tar sands. And the reasons for this are as follows. What the tar sands really represent is the very last attempt at exponential capitalist growth. Because what the tar sands really are the true explanation of peak oil. If we weren't running out of conventional oil, we certainly wouldn't be in the tar sands, which basically require a 30% energy subsidy through natural gas. And what the tar sands illustrate is the lunacy of endless growth. If we are to continue to grow endlessly, what we'll find ourselves doing is investing more and more energy to produce less and less energy, and basically fall off the edge of this cliff of energy returned on energy invested. Because once we're done with the tar sands, and we may very well exhaust the easiest to get tar sands within 40 years, then we'll be into even crazier stuff like oil shale, coal to liquids, which require even more energy to continue to sort of attempt to wring out the last drops of to fuel industrial society.
That's extraordinary, the progression you show, the if we continue our current course there. Is there, you know, with the financial crisis and this sort of analysis, is there an opportunity for environmental groups to step into this breach and actually call for their shutdown now?
Well, there certainly is, and there's always been, but the basic issue about what we know as mainstream environmental groups in Canada is their fundamentally anti-democratic nature. Most of these organizations do not have members. They only have financial subscribers. And I believe for a vibrant environmental movement to exist that takes a principled stance on these issues, they need to become fundamentally democratic, and they need to do such things as be able to call for a shutdown of the tar sands, be able to call for dramatic conservation measures, and fundamentally to deal with the looming and well underway double crisis of peak oil and climate change. We need to get serious and start talking about rationing energy supplies so that we don't have people freezing in the dark.
Well, thanks very much for coming in and talking with me about it today. I much appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and nice to see you again.
Likewise. I've been talking with Peter Cizek. Peter Cizek is a writer and land use planner. For more information on this issue, his article on shutting down the tar sands will appear in the Canadian Dimension in January. And also, he mentioned the website oilsandstruth.org, and you can go there and find out more.